Welcome to An Actor Despairs. I'm your host, Ryan Perez.
Ladies and gentlemen, today on An Actor Despairs, we have Jason Butler Horner. I'm so excited for you guys to hear this interview. Jason is an incredible actor. We're here today to talk about his new film, The Big Bend, but you've also seen him in other things like Homeland, Ozark, and you can currently see him in Sugar with Colin Farrell. Jason's also been a part of so many other amazing film, television, and theater projects. He's one of the best actors we have in the business right now, and it means so much that you came on and gave back, brother. I hope every one of you out there listening is doing okay, fighting the fight, and keeping your heads up. All right, guys, here it is. Jason Butler Horner, welcome to An Actor Despairs. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? I'm so happy to be here.
It is such an immense honor to have you on the show. You know, I think as an actor myself, I've certainly looked up to you for a long time, and there's such a gravitas to the characters and the roles you've played. You know, you're able to do this intensity very well without it being so far one direction that you humanize these, you know, people that can be very conflicted. And you're also, there's just such a lightness to you, and you're a master at your craft. I mean, the career that you've built out, it has been something that I've always, you know, 1/100th of what you've gotten to would be amazing for me. And I'm so proud of the work that you're doing. And so many of my listeners, you know, I've always wanted to have you on the show. And today it's a real honor to have you here. So thank you for coming on. It means a lot to me.
That's so nice. Thank you. It's a great way to begin my Monday.
I'm here to try to lift all hearts, but you know,
I'll take it, man. I'll take it. It's a gray day here. The world is
not in LA. Yeah, post-strike, it's a lot. But I'm curious, you know, as my audience knows, I always start at the beginning. Where did you grow up?
With tremendous pride, I grew up in a small town. I was born in a small town called Elmira, New York. It's like an hour from Ithaca. And when I was five, we moved to Virginia, Alexandria, Virginia. And I moved around a lot as a kid, divorced.
Which high school? My mom went to Yorktown.
She went to where?
Yorktown? Yeah.
I went to, they've renamed the school because he was like a segregationist or something. It's called T.C. Williams.
Remember the Titans.
Remember the Titans. Yeah. So I went to T.C. and then I happened to do like a lot of musicals in T.C. I didn't do any, they needed guys, and I didn't do any plays. There's a funny story there. And then I went to Richmond, and I went to VCU.
If we can go even sooner than that, talk to me about how the bug happened for you. Are your parents artists?
Oh, God, no. I mean, my dad's artistic, but no. My family were all like workers, you know, teachers, carpenters, plumbers. And when my parents moved out of small town to suburban Virginia, big city. They did it because they wanted to change. My dad was the first to get a degree. He went to Grove City College. He got a degree in like social work or something. And my mom was working a bunch of jobs. She was a buyer for a store. And then she started working for United Way. And she got recruited to be at United Way of America, which is based in Alexandria, Virginia. So that's how we went there. And then when I was in high school, I knew when I saw a couple things where I felt really special in the theater. I felt safe in the theater.
Yeah.
But it was completely foreign. It was crazy. It wasn't even an idea that it was possible to do that. And then when I was in junior high school, I did like a couple things, these hilarious. They were just, they were like, you know, plays for high school, junior high school. And then they would just rename them.
Like there was, like the PC version of, you know, Death of a Salesman or something.
It was at George Washington Junior High School. They did this play, the Young Dracula, but because Cats was popular, they just renamed it Bats.
And, wow.
Yeah. And then when I was in high school, I was like the president of the Thespian Society and the drama club and all that stuff. And I was really short and really heavy and had a lot of feelings. And they did a play in the fall, a musical in the spring, and I ended up being in the three musicals. Not that I can sing really well then, I'm better now, but they just needed boys. So I did like I was in Peter Pan. I was Michael, wow. And we actually had a flat. We flew, and then we did
hell of a production.
It was crazy. We did Fame, where I don't know if you remember Fame the movie, but the high school version isn't that whatever the guy's name is, Paul McCrane character. It's not that he's gay. It's that he had the change in the late 80s was that he had testicular cancer.
Oh my God.
he lost a nut. Yeah. Like and then we also did my final thing was The Wizard of Oz, and it was a Tin Man in that. Anyway, classic. So then I have been really blessed, and I know that is sort of overused, but I have, you have to have a sense of faith in some way. And over the course of my life, I've had to really work on it because like many people, we had a bad thing as a kid with religion. It just we were Catholic. And when my parents divorced, they were kind of like, thanks for coming to Blessed Sacrament. And, so faith can be complicated, but, I definitely have had some huge seminal moments. One was when I got into VCU, and definitely one was when I got into NYU and some other grad and some other big moments where something, I just didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
And something was like, here, let's open this door for you. You know, it was April. I mean, I was a mess in high school, grades all over the place, A's, F's, great in English, great in forensics, you know, but just like, I was all over the place. And so I applied to the colleges. I'm the youngest. And
VCU always
said, you can be whatever you go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was going to say VCU being the goal.
No, not at all. Oh. I had a big chip on my shoulder. I was like, I'm not going to this glorified community college. But but then, you know, like there was a cool thing in high school in your senior year where you could teach kids with special needs. They've changed the terminology, but basically like, I forget what they used to call them, like trainable or educable, mentally retarded was what they used to call them.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I taught this girl, Karsha, and I loved it. And so I thought I was going to be a special ed teacher, but my grades were horrible. I applied to Oberlin because a friend went there, but I didn't do the essay. And I thought, it'll be okay. Like, it was crazy.
to be in high school, horrible.
Yeah. And nobody was minding the store. You know, I was fed and everyone was lovely. My parents were great, but they didn't know how to, they were caught up. They did the best they could.
They didn't know
how to mind and care in that way, you know? So on the pro side, different from their childhood, they were like, you can be whatever you want, do whatever you want. We want you to be happy. And it was great. But then the rails, having the guidelines to kind of focus on that, you know, where you need somebody, that was a different thing. Yeah. Anyway, I'd done one audition for, you know, Virginia Vita, the theater conferences.
Yeah,
know?
Totally.
And because
God, you're bringing me back to my high school. I forgot about those.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I had gotten a letter. I didn't even open it. I had like an empty box I just threw college shit in. And it was April, and I had gotten rejected, of course, from randomly William & Mary, Cornell, and Oberlin. And I was like, what is this? And it was literally like April 4th, and I opened it, and it said, if we have a spot for you. We liked your piece from A Dark at the Top of the Stairs. We have a spot for you if you let us know by April 4th. And I just picked up that phone and was like, yeah, I'm going to come.
VCU?
And I had to live at the Medical College of Virginia because the housing was so late, and then take the bus. But, you know, VCU, my class, I know it's controversial in a way, but I kind of miss it now at VCU. I got a very good training there. Like I did. I didn't know what I was doing.
What was there a methodology or a school, so to speak?
I mean, it was Stanislavski, but like, so this, my first acting teacher, this guy, Gary Hopper, he was an amazing acting teacher. And it was basically like, it was a lot of column work. Like you had to have your I want, what you wanted to do. You had to have your obstacle, what's getting in the way. You had to have the magic as if to imagine what would be there. And then there were something else in circumstances like that. And it helped for training, like, what am I doing? How will I know when I get it? You know, and to give active verbs and all of that stuff. And also there was a benefit. I think I should have left VCU like third year. Like, I think I got what I needed. And also I didn't know that you could go for a year at like RADA or something. It was just outside of my imagination.
Same. Yeah.
And I would have definitely benefited if I had done that. But at that point, I'm like, okay, I just got to get my degree.
Yeah.
So I started doing plays outside of VCU. I did a few at VCU. My first play was this play by A.R. Gurney. It's kind of like the waspy Brighton Beach memoirs. It's called What I Did Last Summer.
Okay.
And it was quite a breakthrough moment where I was like, oh, I'm good at this. And people are telling me I'm good at it. But I was also the underdog at school, which I thought was really helpful. You know, there were kids that came in that were at King's Dominion and could like clog and stuff.
King's Dominion. Oh, man.
They were like hot
Jason,
shit.
Jason, you bring me back.
It's crazy. I was like, wow, they did a show at King's Dominion. But wow. Then they, you know, and I celebrate whenever anyone's like, I don't want to do this. I don't want this life. I don't want to be an actor. I celebrate it for them, you know. Anyway, so... And we started at the time, we had 96 freshmen and there were cuts, and I graduated with 12.
Wow, that is massive cuts.
And is it two of us
are BFA acting. Program?
BFA, yeah.
So you didn't have to do a lot of like mathematics, science?
No, there was like one requirement. I took an earth science over the summer. There were English requirements. I took Spanish. We had to take art history though, which was amazing. And a lot of dance movement stuff. But the art history course, I'm so glad I took it. I ended up taking it for an extra semester. And that's been really helpful. I use paintings and stuff all the time.
I got my minor in art and public policy. So I really identify with that. Yeah, public that's policy. Amazing. Yeah.
That's a real degree.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a minor. It wasn't a degree, but, you know, yeah. So I'm so curious, you know, while you were in Richmond, I know there was kind of like this moment there where – it was really more so Wilmington had these tax incentives, but Richmond got a few things. Were you, by the time you had started to get your confidence and in some of these shows, were you looking at agents yet?
There were, no, not at all. I didn't even think about it. I didn't think about it till after that year, after I graduated, I was an apprentice at Actors Theater of Louisville.
Okay.
And that's like an unpaid, unhoused, you work your ass off.
Equity card giving though?
No, like equity membership candidate.
Mm.
So like you run all the shows, you get classes, and I was brought in by a great acting teacher, Bob Krakauer, but
Bob is the best.
Right. So we've become friends since, but he had a falling out with John Jory over the summer. And I was just busting my ass for jobs in the summer. I worked at this market, I worked at a restaurant, somehow I got a job at this thing, a lobbyist in Virginia called the American Meat Institute. And I just worked nonstop. And I think I raised a long time ago, I think I raised like $10,000.
Wow.
But I knew the money was going to run out, and it did. And
what was it that lit the fire under you? Because that's a lot to do.
I was just like, when I went to college, that thing happens where I was like, oh, fuck. What am I going to do? I'm 17 years old because my birthday is in October. I'm 17. I got to figure out what I want to do. I don't want, I like this. I'm going to go here. And luckily the training was good. And there was a thing also you had to do in your first year. You had to spend one semester building sets and you had to spend one semester building costumes. And you couldn't act in the stage productions. I think it's amazing. Since then they've turned it back and all this stuff. I thought it was amazing because I am the kind of guy who always understands the whole function. Like, I understand this is my cog in the wheel. It's a huge, massive thing. I have tremendous respect for every department. And it's important to me, you know? And also, I'm a great carpenter. I was just rebuilding my porch, and I can sew. And, you know, it's... My family, as I said, were carpenters, so also like something kicked in that was nice. But so I'm really lucky. And then Louisville was a year, and at VCU,
an enjoyable time, year, or
it was.
It sounds like VCU was positive, but Louisville was intense.
VCU was positive. As I said, I think like I could have left early and done something, but I was of course committed to getting the degree. And. And I started working professionally in there, and like I won the Richmond Times Dispatch. They've renamed it, but it's called the Phoebe Award.
Amazing.
There were plays that really changed me learning what I could do. I did this play this Charles Bush play, and it was super comedy that I didn't know how to do. And I'm good at comedy. A lot of the reason because of that one play, Psycho Beach Party. And I had to be, I don't know how well you know Charles Bush, but it's like Charles.
I don't, but please tell me.
So he's like, did you happen to see Oh Mary yet, downtown with Cola Scola?
I haven't yet.
It's
no.
The fucking funniest fucking thing ever.
I gotta see it. Okay, amazing.
It's crazy. It is crazy. It's also $200 for a ticket at the Lortel, but I hope.
Yeah, I had $200 at the Lortel. Well, but I mean,
Cole is amazing.
Okay,
they are fantastic. Anyway, so it's like downtown gay theater. It's like these like he wrote this play Vampire Lesbians of Sodom, and Psycho Beach Party is like a spin on Gidget and all these beach movies, and the lead character is this girl Chicklet played by a man, and all these kind of iconic jokes that at the time I didn't know, Mommy Dearest and all these things. And I was really afraid to play a character like that because I was figuring out my own sexuality, and I was like, oh god. But whatever, it was like a big moment. The same year I won the Phoebe for Brighton Beach Memoirs. I can't believe I'm talking about this, but the Brighton Beach Memoirs, I was also seconded on for this Psycho Beach Party. Anyway, so then wow. I left there, went to Louisville. And when I was in Louisville, Scott Ziegler, who does Practical Aesthetics.
Yeah.
And he came, and also another big moment, I was introduced to Ann Bogart because I was in a production of Picnic that she did. But it was Picnic like with a tube of neon and a psych and a silver leaf oval disc. And so I learned a whole movement technique that was new to me. And that was when there were like 7 viewpoints. Now I think there's like 24.
Oh, right? Man, it's insane. You can't keep
but
up.
But it changed my life.
It did.
Yeah. And then she invited me to come to they used to have a thing. They just ended it called the Saratoga. Their company was called City, and they did a thing at Skidmore, and she invited me there. And again, I had no money, and I just figured it out somehow. And then last thing, when I was in New York, people started talking about going to grad school.
Yeah.
And at VCU, the grad program was a joke, unless you wanted to go into pedagogy. And I was like, yeah, I don't
know
how to go into pedagogy. And I was in New York. I did like 5 or 6 plays while I was working at the New York Hilton and Towers as a check-in guy and Spanish translator. I started working at Spirit Cruise Lines, answering the phone.
Wow.
And I was there for like a year and a half. And I thought I was playing Richard II up at Columbia Grad because Ann Bogart was a teacher at Columbia Grad. So I went and auditioned and started working with the grad directors. And that's how I was also doing plays around town for no money when there were spaces that you could do these plays. Like when 4th Street had spaces.
Oh, my God. When La Mama was accessible and
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I played Eric Menendez with Steve Belber, who is Lyle Menendez. But it was like – it was the – it was set – to like, we did the boot, scoot, and boogie while getting cross-examined. And
oh, my God. I want to see this.
It was crazy. There's a review in the New York Times.
Tell me this is at Lincoln Center where I can go watch it. I got to see this production.
They definitely did not make that.
Oh, but, man.
So while I was doing Richard II, I was like...
At Columbia.
Yeah, it was in the cathedral. Like, I was up in... It was amazing. And I thought... I know what to do here, but I don't have the skills to do that. Mm-hmm. And Anne had wanted me to go to Columbia for the grad program, but I just thought I respect them and their technique at the time so much, but I was like, I want a more well-rounded training. And I didn't believe in grad school, but some people were talking about it so much. And it was too late to audition for Yale or to apply to Yale. And I didn't want to go to Juilliard.
Yeah, 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the timeline was not good. And then someone said, you know, NYU grad has a good acting program. I was like, really? And so, like, on a literal whim, I went in and I went to the front desk and I wrote the application in because you could wait to bring the money for the application.
Oh, right. They still have that. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Where you can come and do it on the day of, like the walk-ins.
So I filled the thing out and I had to get letters of rec. And my teachers at VCU were like, do not do this. Why are you doing this? And my family was—
because of the money aspect of it?
I think because they thought it was unnecessary. It was a waste of money and time. And I was like, well, I'm just going to, we'll see. And I put, like, it asked, like, how are you going to pay for it? And I was like, I have $250 in the bank. I don't know. And my family was, of course, like, you cannot borrow. What are you talking about? How will you pay this back?
Yeah.
And I just thought, then I did the audition and I got a call back.
Was this for Ron Van Loo at the time?
It was for Ron and Zelda. Ron, Zelda. And I had known Zelda, I didn't know her, but I grew up going to Arena Stage when friends' parents had tickets. And so Arena Stage was very important to me. It still is important to me. These two books just came out about Zelda Fitchenda last week, and I'm quoted in one of them. And one is just her speeches. She was an amazing speaker. So inspiring, so much about art and what the creation of art is and why it's necessary. And anyway.
I have to check that out.
It's good.
Yeah.
You can order them. I'm waiting for mine to come in from Skylight. Support local bookstores. And anyway, so I had the callback. The callback was on the floor, and you spend a day taking classes, like circus and vocal and a little bit of acting. And then they do an interview with you, and they look at your pieces. I think I only had to do two.
Do you remember what they were, the classical and the contemporary?
Yeah. One was the Banished monologue, Romeo's Banished monologue. And one was from this play called Life During Wartime, Keith Radin.
Okay.
And I think that's what it was. And it's funny, I've become friends with Keith since and like done readings of his and stuff. So, and then I got in and I was like, okay. And I like the vibe of the fifth floor. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's like—
Oh, I've auditioned and called back. I didn't get in, but yeah, I've been, yeah, I know the magic well, yeah. Maybe it's weird because I went to undergrad there, so I get it, but—
When I was in school, they had a program where you could do undergrad and grad in 6 years as opposed to 7 years. They cut— your senior year was your first year of grad.
Yeah, it's changed now. And I mean, I never had the money either. I mean, now it's $90,000 a year. It's just—
I have a mentee who's about to graduate. And one, Patrick Vail, who was in Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of my mentees. And basically the gay guys, which I'm happy to do.
Yeah.
There's a guy who's about to graduate who is really incredible named Brendan George. He did a one-man show that he did at 52nd Street. I mean, 59th Street. You know, project, and he's killing it. I'm so happy for him and happy to help him.
That's I'm so kind of you, and I love that.
Anyway,
I
borrowed a lot of money, so I graduated with a lot of debt, and I didn't pay it off until— because I did a lot of plays. I was lucky.
Was it a good class that you were with? Because I know so much of that can make or break the experience.
It was a good class. Having done the Louisville rigor and being exhausted. And because I was going to so much debt, I was like, just exhaust me, use me. Yeah. I want to be tired. And also when it's too far, like in the second year, you have to say, hold on, you got to dial back. We can't do all this. But my class, a lot of my class, I had really amazing people in my class. Yeah. A lot of them went on to become writers. So Jeff Witte was in my class, who wrote Avenue Q and some other stuff, and Sam Catlin, who was on Breaking Bad and Preacher, and he happened to come in to help kind of doctor this show I'm in on Apple Plus right now called Sugar.
Yeah.
I play Colin Farrell's best friend, so that was interesting. And this other guy, Glenn Kessler, he did Damages, and then he did that show down in Florida that had Norbert Butts.
Wow. So that's awesome, though. I mean, it must have been amazing friendships that stayed with you for life.
I'm a community person. That's why I'm a theater person. That's why theater is more important to me, or independent films are kind of— they touch my heart more.
Same.
Because you have more agency.
Yeah.
And it's a team. you know.
And less of a corporate machinery behind the whole thing that you have no control over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ozark was a little different, you know, because Jason has extreme respect and he knows every department, every job. And if somebody is a jerk in any way, they're out, you know. Yeah. It's about a cool environment and go. And anyway, so what happened? Then I went to, oh yeah. So my class.
You get to the showcase part. And at this point, you know, I imagine with the debt and the idea of being in New York City, even though we already spoke about it, wasn't, you know, $10,000 for studio like it is now. With the showcase at the end, were you like, I want to do theater. I want to be here in New York? Because I know a lot of people.
It was unfathomable to me. I graduated in 97.
Okay.
All I ever thought I wanted to do was be a company member at Arena Stage. That was the extent of what I thought was possible.
Yeah.
And then I started being like, well, I really would like to, I don't know. Like it was, and at the time the programs were very much about theater is the only real true.
Yeah.
Form. They've changed because as we would say, it's like, yeah, but the only people in your brochures are the people that are successful.
It's so funny.
So they've changed it. Definitely changed it. But
well, theater's changed. It's hard to get those roles unless you're Denzel Washington or Jake Gyllenhaal now, you know?
It's crazy. You certainly can't get on Broadway, you know? When I got on Broadway, I just cried. It was like a big moment. But also when I walked into after I graduated, when
you get rep?
I did. I got repped by Abrams Artists.
Rest in peace.
And I mean,
yeah, God,
it's crazy. I was at ICM and then they folded, and I knew they weren't going to be able to take me to CAA. And then I went back to A3 to try it out for a year, and it was fine.
Yeah,
but not quite right. And then they folded. And so I was like, okay. But I've been with my manager for a shocking number of years. Like if you met us, you'd be like, wait, what? But Andrew. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. And the dumbest thing, I don't believe in regret. I don't believe in regret, or I try not to believe in regret.
I need to adopt that as someone who drank and did drugs for too long.
You just can't live in you can't live in shame, and you know, it's hard.
Yeah.
Also when I didn't have confidence. I mean, I knew I was good at some stuff, and I just didn't have the confidence that some of my friends that either they're really born with it and there's grit in a different way and self-possession, or also if they come from families, I'm not begrudging them or shitting on them, but like if they come from families, especially in the business, it's like any family business. You're comfortable with like, oh, this is how you build a chair. Oh, this is how you unclog a thing. I don't need to freak out about it. And when they come from families where the theater or acting or certainly film is in the business, there's a sense of, I don't know if it's entitlement. Sometimes it can be entitlement, but there's a sense of like, what are you talking about? I deserve such and such. I had to earn it in a different way, you know.
I'm curious because earlier you had mentioned, you know, when you were in high school, you were still kind of not really sure physically in yourself, and then you went to Columbia and you didn't have this. By the time you got out of NYU grad, you feel like you had found your voice, maybe not entirely your confidence,
no, for sure.
You did.
For sure. Like the impact, I just recently did some teaching. I've done it like 3 times, 2 week courses in Shakespeare at Cal Arts, because I have a friend. He was a teacher there, and he's a director. He's not an actor. So I've gone and done these 2 week stints with the actors, sophomores, and it's awesome. And CalArts is a different kind of.
Thank you for doing that. It means a lot, you know, even though I'm not there.
I like it.
Yeah.
I learn from them, and I'm in a great position because I don't have to deal with the bureaucracy in any way. I don't know any of the faculty. They don't ask me about the students. My friend is a teacher. He doesn't ask me, you know, and it's Shakespeare. And so, no, I really like it a lot because also I'm able to say to them, you know, this is literally a safe space in a cocoon.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about everything. And we're going to talk about the business. And I'm going to talk to you about why these skills translate into Law and Order exposition. It's the same skills. And I'm going to talk to you about size. about, like, it's the same thing, but who's watching you? Are you out in the Delacorte? Are you in a close-up, you know? And, yeah, it's awesome. And also they're cool because Shakespeare is a polarizing writer.
In America, for whatever reason, it is, you know, and that's...
But I mean, since we are having the overdue come to truth about especially race and gender and ethnicity, and... But you just have to, I'm intrigued by situations where people just want to write it off. And you're like, no, here's why this is a classic. This is why one of the main writers in the canon. And I'm here to talk about more of them. Tell me more of them besides August Wilson in terms of writers of color. Like, but here's why Shakespeare's good from a skill perspective, from a thinking perspective, from a dexterity of everything. Like, here's why it's good.
And there's also just no small choice in that. And that's something it's hard to get in other plays. And that's amazing. And
yeah, I did a lot of Shakespeare when I got out of school. So
I was going to say, is that what you were doing? Like Shakespeare in the Park? Were you going in?
I got in the park right after school. They did Henry the Eighth and I understudied Stuhlbarg. And then I got my equity card.
I just saw Patriots the other night. No way.
I hear he's amazing in it.
He is amazing.
I mean, he's always amazing.
Everything that they have that comes here has always been awesome. But I was, you know, not that I doubted him. I was surprised how much I loved it, you know,
because awesome.
Russian politics is dark.
Oh, believe me.
Yeah. I
did do the Coast of Utopia for.
That was an amazing experience.
Yeah. It was like, you know, that was a 12-hour. That was an amazing experience. Wow. That was a once in a lifetime. You're like 45 actors. You know, it was a trilogy. I don't know if you know that it was just Tom Stoppard. I've done a lot of Stoppard. I premiered The Invention of Love in San Francisco, in America, in San Francisco. I do a lot of American premieres of English plays. And then my first movie was The Changeling, where I had never been a dangerous person. And then that was my first role. And it bizarrely sort of set the die for me being these bad guys. And like, I'm so not that. It was.
You're such a great guy. You know,
I mean, it's like, it's crazy. It was like comedies, fun, crazy comedies. And, you know, it was all the iconic Edmund in Long Day's Journey and Tonight, Tom in the Glass Menagerie with Sally Field, Trofimov with Annette Bening and Alfred.
You did one with Carey Mulligan as well, right?
Yeah. That was after. No, that was before Ozark.
And as you were doing these things, you know, and these amazing productions, I mean, I'm sure creatively they provided so much for you. But, you know, obviously working in the world, well, I was going to say financially, they're not the most rewarding, you know. And I did
like so much credit card debt. I did that thing you could do it at the time where you would get a Discover card and you would buy the balance for this card and you had 6 months at 0%. Like I just did it. It was like a big thing. I would do like 4 or 5 plays a year. And that was awesome, but
it's crazy because I did The Gilded Age with Darren Goldstein, who was on Broadway all summer when we were shooting. He told me he made more in one day on The Gilded Age than he did all summer on Broadway. So it's just
I had a job at Lincoln. I'm always dying to do a play. Like I really miss it.
Thank you for that.
I'm better when I do a play. I don't want to do a year run. Like after the Crucible run, I was like, I don't want to live in this. I don't know how they do Long Day's Journey for long runs. Like I was happy I had a 6-week run in San Francisco. I'm good friends with Sarah Paulson. She's doing Appropriate right now, which is exhausting. And she has stamina for days, man.
Corey Stoll's in that as well, right?
Yeah.
Another NYU guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but you know, you're in it.
Is that something that's imperative to you? You know, obviously you got Sugar and all these other amazing things we've had to talk about, but every year you tell your reps, you know, I got to get back on the stage.
I tell them all the time.
Yeah.
The hard part is I can't afford, it's going to cost me to do the play.
Right.
You know, it's going to cost.
Thank you for sharing that honestly. Cause
it's tricky. Like I love all these theaters. I support them. I do the galas. I get the hard work that they do. And you know, there's a reason why they call it Fraudway because, you know, you're getting paid like $1,300, maybe $1,700, which sounds amazing. But when you translate it, And or you're doing a play. I have a special relationship with Lincoln Center because of Coast of Utopia and this, sorry, I have a nose here. And this play I did called Observe the Sons of Ulster, Marching Towards the Somme. I love them. I love Daniel Sweet. I love Andre Bishop. I love Bernie Gersten. Like, it's a really important theater to me.
Yeah.
And I was really happy. I was offered a part in Corruption, which they just closed. The J.T. Rogers play. I love his writing. And I've never worked with Bart Scher. I wanted to work with Bart Scher. And like a week after I accepted it, the strike sort of ended and I got offered the Menendez job now.
Mm.
And
are you guys still filming that?
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah. I have one day left. They're going to the end of May.
Got it.
And I played Detective Zoller in that, who solved the case and was a great detective. And I do tons of, you can't tell because my hair is wet, but my hair is like dyed red. And when I go back to work, I have to shave this off and I look like Ned Flanders. But
well, you're a beautiful looking man. So, you know, it works, beard or no beard. But then
I got that job. It's 4 episodes. And, you know, of course, I earn more in one episode than I do for the entire rehearsal and run of the play there. Also, I had to be a local hire.
That's a new thing the business is doing now. You know, it's brutal.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't. I was going to go into a lot of debt after, you know, after the pandemic and the strike. It's hard.
Yeah. You know? I finished
a series called Next, literally on like March 6, 2020. And when I went into the Chicago airport, I was like, wow, this is weird. And you know, I was like, it'll be okay. I don't think Next is going to get a second season, but it's okay. I'm going to get another job. And then it's just, I'm lucky. I'm very lucky, never ungrateful. I have these, since the pandemic, I have these chunky arcs, Handmaids, Sugar, a show coming out called Clipped about the Clippers.
If it's Menendez, okay for the audience, let's so we're going back to like, just because there's so much amazing richness to your career. You do grad school. You have all these amazing productions that you're a part of.
Bad ones. Don't get me wrong.
Well, of course, you know, but I mean, we're actors. We're responsible for the work, not the words necessarily. But
you always know when the review is bad or good, because if they've been laughing all along and then the day after the review, it's just crickets. You're like, okay, got a bad review. Or if they're over laughing easily, you're like, okay, I guess we got a good review. I try really hard not to read them. You know, when I first got out, I would read them a lot. But now I'm pretty good at being like, I don't care.
That's amazing. And I know, you know, at that time, Law & Order was my first thing. Was that obviously one
all
of
I
your
wanted
first...
was to be on Law & Order.
Oh, man. Which
all
one was
I
your...
wanted
was
to
Which one was your?
I didn't get any. I've been on Law & Order 3 times. And that's how I got my manager, actually. I had just premiered The Invention of Love, gotten incredible reviews. It was a big win to be the lead opposite James Cromwell in this play.
I can only imagine.
It was a big moment and sort of established my relationship with Tom in a way that's important to me. And it's a workout. It's language. It's full of emotion and jokes and witty and dry. So anyway, and then I came back to New York. And I got my first like Law & Order audition from this agent, and it was like a 4-line part, like a Tiffany's salesman who was written to be like, you know, like he's supposed to be like really like prissy and like super gay. And I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
But I was afraid to say no. I didn't know. I'm from a working class family. I needed the money. You know, and the idea of saying no, which is so important for an actor, like it's the only control you have for your entire career is to say no. I said, you know, I really don't want to do this. There's somebody else who can do it better. I don't want to establish this as like, this is who I am and what I do. I can do it. Agent said your expectations are completely unrealistic, and I was like, I just
fuck yourself.
Yeah. And so then at the time, people didn't have managers. And some friends of mine said, oh, you should talk to this guy. So I talked to this young guy. He was completely different than me, like a bro, loves The Godfather. And I was like, maybe this is the energy I need.
Yeah, totally.
And unbeknownst to me, he submitted me for a three-scene part, a lab tech for Law & Order. And I was like, okay. And then I auditioned and I got that part. And then I told Abrams, I think we're done here. And I left. And I was agentless for a while.
Wow.
Which was fine, actually.
Yeah. And so, and then obviously you had done so many other credits that started building up all the New York shows. You know, obviously, for time's sake, I don't want to go down.
Ozark your was a big win, though. So, I mean, so, Changeling was a big win because it was Clint Eastwood and Angelina Jolie. And I had perhaps the biggest career scene I've had career in my career with Angelina Jolie. And I was like on these, I was on all the short lists for the Oscar, and a friend of mine the year prior had been on the short list and then was nominated for an Oscar. So I knew that. And I was like, I just was like, well, we'll see. Yeah. And then I didn't get it. And then I forget how long it was till I did like other stuff. Now I do a lot of television. I started doing some independent films. Independent films are important. I know we're partially here to talk about The Big Bend, which is really important to me. But, you know, The Big Bend, we're out in The Big Bend, for people who don't know, is a national park in, like, you fly into El Paso and you drive for another 5 hours.
To West Texas.
West Texas. Yeah. Like, it is the desert. It is beautiful. There are energy lines underneath. It is living off of the grid. And, Brett Wagner, the writer-director, had an experience out there with a good friend who's also the producer of the movie, Aaron Brown. And they each have kids and wives, and one's divorced now. And they had this weekend, and he wrote this movie and with some obviously dramatic things involved. It didn't actually happen. And so we're out there pre-pandemic. It was 2019 in the summer, 122 degrees every day. It was like one of those $100 a day jobs. Rough, dude, rough. Because obviously there's no communication out there. There's no cell service. There's no...
Yeah.
So...
Which makes sense with the walkies in the movie, you know?
But it doesn't reach. You know what I mean? Like, we're all housed all over. People are living in the house that we're... Of course, you know, it's scrappy and it's fun, but it's also hard, you know.
Yeah.
You have to learn to like pivot and kill your babies fast when you're like, okay, we're not making our days. So I'm always, it's important to me, you know, where I'm always like, listen, I understand what my contract says for SAG, but I'm telling you, like, grab a camera, let's get in the van or the truck and just film me driving around, because you're going to need a voiceover at some point.
Yeah.
You know,
that's amazing that you have that editorial lens to be able to know that, you know, because so many actors tend to be, I'm above that and I need this, but it's about the work for you. And
I mean,
I
if you feel like
that.
You're not being treated well, or you're being abused, or you're being taken for granted, then the boundary, have to have the boundary. But then you're also like, we're probably never going to be able to have any reshoots. So I've invested this 3 weeks of my life. There's a baby scorpion in my bed at one night. You know, like, there's stuff.
Yeah.
But then there's also, there's a beautiful scene, which is one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and also probably one of the most, I love my experience.
Can we talk spoilers? Or?
Yeah, I mean.
Which scene? I'm curious.
The scene where, so, spoiler.
Yeah.
Basically, but it's okay. Two families come together. I have a cancer diagnosis. And my wife and I know about it, the amazing Virginia Call. We had such great chemistry. I was just watching it the other night. And there's just one of my most favorite scene is a scene that we had lost the day, but dusk was setting. And the amazing DP, I like having a relationship with the camera ops and the DP. Yeah. It's important to me. It's like your other scene partner. And anyway, the sun was setting and I was like, let's just grab something. And so we went up on this hill. And similar, we're like, we might need it. And Virginia and I were there, and we just loved each other and held the weight of this story. And it is like It's so full and so simple and beautiful.
No, your work is beautiful in that. And it's great to, you know, we will talk about, but the lightness to be able to see that and the heaviness of the diagnosis and let alone the event of the film.
That's always my, that's what's important to me because of the theater. Like, you have to know, you have to love your character. I had a teacher, Mary Lou Rosato, who's like, you are the lawyer for your character, you know? So you can't judge them. And even with Changeling, where I played this guy, real guy who kidnapped kids and killed them and stuff. You have to, of course, you understand that, you know, I do a lot of research. I like it. It's fun. And also you're like, okay, so both of his parents were in jail at the time. He had survived abuse. It's a classic story where the abused becomes the abuser because they think they're loving the kid or, you know.
Hurting people hurt people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but you have to find where they laugh, where their sense of humor is for sure, where their humanity is, where they're vulnerable, where their fury is, where they, you know, it just has to be uncompromising and it has to be accessible. And depending on the style that you're in, the tone of the movie, you know, if you're in a comedy, you have to be this. It's different than something like that. And so in The Big Bend, it was really important to me that we had levity. And the first scene we shot, this is always the case, man. The first scene we shot was the sex scene. So it was like,
wow, the okay, bunk beds.
Well, here we go. And Virginia had seen me. I played Hamlet in Dallas, and I think she went to SMU, and she'd seen me there, which was nice. And then I met her in New York when she introduced herself.
Wow.
Before she did the flick, right? Anyway, which she was amazing in. And so we're like, we're both theater actors. And so we're like, let's just go. And it was like, what's comfortable? Let's also like, what's the way that we do this honestly? So if you watch that scene, like we put in jokes about having to clean up the cum.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think you threw your underwear at her at one point too.
Yeah. And it was like,
it's so real.
And like, we had that great spontaneous laughter that we're fucking in the bottom of a bunk bed trying to be quiet.
Yeah.
And I'm like proud of that stuff, you know?
You should be. It's amazing.
It makes me happy. Like, you made a choice and it's good and it's different.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of times, especially in certain television things, it's okay. A cliche is a cliche because it happens often.
Right.
But you have to try hard to avoid the trope. Like right now in Menendez, I'm the detective, you know, and detectives do detective work. And how is that interesting? You know, so a lot of the stuff for me has been talking about the police tech and the advisor and what the truth is, what happens, what time has to be truncated. So what that means. Obviously, we're not making a documentary, but then you're like, okay, great. Yeah. And procedure. And what's the way of actually thinking, putting something together and trusting that that's enough, not overdoing it. Just like, I'm going to live in this moment of figuring it out or, you know, I'm going to, they need it. That's what the scene is. I'm not begrudging the writing in any way. The writing is great on this. And it just is, it's important to me in big and small. It can be trickier if something is small, like on a Law and Order or something, which is important if you're not, you know, it's sometimes it can be where I learned that I didn't have to suffer and wear a hair shirt for every job, you know, like I would have to go to this place. And then I was like, oh, you don't have to do that. As Ron Van Loo would say, like, you are enough. You are interesting. Trust that you're interesting.
Thank you for sharing.
That's like one of my favorite things I live by.
Yeah.
You are enough.
And obviously because, you know, my viewers will want to know. I mean, talk to me about Ozark and getting that, whether it was an audition or an offer.
No, that was an audition.
With Alexa?
Mm-hmm. It's funny. Alexa's at NYU right now, and Brendan wrote me that she was there. She's one of those, you know, you have casting directors that you're like, this is a great one. She's a New Yorker, you know. It's about grit. It's about integrity. It's about clarity. And she's one of my favorite. And I love Susan Shopmaker. And
Susan's amazing. What she did with the Holdovers was so, you know.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So I had done a movie that Jason directed that movie? Yeah, he did. He did direct it. Gosh. Called The Family Fang. It's based on a great novel.
Wow.
Catherine. So it's Jason and Nicole are siblings. It's a great novel. And Catherine Hahn and I are the younger parent, the parents of the Nicole and Jason as kids.
Yeah.
And we're performance artists and we put the kids through a lot of hell. And our grown-up versions are Chris Walken. I'm the young Chris Walken.
Wow.
And Catherine is the young.
What a cast.
What's her name? Sorry, I'm forgetting her name right now. She's such a great actor. She is a great Mary Ann Plunkett. Is that her name?
Okay.
She's married to Jay O. Saunders, and I can't believe that's the clarification, because she's an amazing actress.
Yeah.
And while Catherine was doing it, and they had specifically said, don't do a Walken impression. So, like, I put, like, little teeny touches in there. But partially because when we were shooting that low-budget movie, it had more budget than The Big Bend, obviously, or this other movie I did during the pandemic called Edge of Everything that I also love. They were trying to find who was going to play that, who's going to be the mother at the older version.
Wow.
And it was like Sally Field, and then she couldn't do it, and I forget who else it was. And then Marianne got it, and she was amazing and perfect. And anyway, that was a lot of fun. That was a really fun shoot. And so Jason and I met then. I really liked him. We hit it off. When the audition came out, on the page, I am absolutely not like what they were looking for.
Yeah.
Not at all. And, you know, it was supposed to be a different kind of physical power. And they, in the pilot, they really love this idea of, like, it's hard. Those storylines are hard. The FBI guy, if it's a crime-based thing, like,
right,
they can't catch them because then it's over. So yeah, it's they're challenging. And so the gift of that obviously was that he was conflicted. He had this guilt about his mother getting addicted to drugs and
yeah, him being responsible. So many layers to that
so
character
much.
That
and
you brought.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And, so anyway, it got down to me and another, and I even went in and I was like, look, I don't know if I'm this guy, but here's a version of it.
Yeah.
And Alexa was awesome. And Jason sort of thought about it. And then I had a call back and I think it was down to two of us. And then I got it. And that was a big moment. And I shadowed a lot. I was going to direct an episode for about 24 hours. They offered an episode for the following season. And then they were like, wait, that was a little too early. But I shadowed a lot. I shadowed Jason. I shadowed this guy, Ben Semenoff. I shadowed a great director, Alexi. I learned so much. I learned how different actors work. I learned more about lighting. I still have a whole bunch to learn.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in a crew, you get to ask questions, you get involvement. Oh, what are we trying to do here? As opposed to, like, when you come in as a guest star, the machine is working and your job is to get in, hit it, get out.
Yeah.
That's your job. You cannot, you know, you got it. It's like with Clint Eastwood, you get two takes. So you better, as a theater actor, you're like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And on film sets, it's about, I mean, it's always about the fullness of it, but the efficiency of it, because time is money.
Yeah.
And especially if you're a guest star, you know, you always, anytime you have first day of school on any job, it's nerve wracking. So this is why I think training is important also, because I talk about this with Laura Linney a lot. Cause during Ozark, we lived together for two seasons, which was really fun.
That must've been amazing.
And she had this thing that happened one night where she had this huge monologue that was supposed to happen in 3 days. And she found out that morning that they were going to have to do it that night because there was a change. This thing happened. And we talked about, she's like, the only way that I could do it that night, because of course she'd been preparing it, but you also were like, I'm going to prioritize this. And the only way she could get through it was because of the grit of training, where you're exhausted and you got to leap and the net will appear. As Zelda Fitchandler would say, quoting a French person, I don't know who it is.
Lecoq, maybe, or something. I don't know.
So you have to, but it's that the part where you're like, okay, I got to get really quiet. Here's what I do immediately to create structure and get there, and then let things drop in, you know.
And you were able to bring so many layers to him, you know, because obviously he gets to these intentional, you know, what one would construe as really kind of malicious moments, but then he's so weighted.
Especially the second season, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it is incredible. And then you're seeing, you know, Mark's a friend who's done the pod, you know, I mean, your scenes with Mark. I mean, you got the love there, you know, it's, I mean, Jason, the benchmark I always say on this podcast, and I really mean this with you, is that, you know, the testament to great acting is when no other actor or actress could play that role. And I always feel that about your work. And I'm not just saying that with an Agent Petty, you know, even in Homeland, where you come with such a distinct energy, you know, you know the material well, and just the way that you're able to carry yourself, it's always like, oh man, you want more of him, you know? And
that makes me feel really happy. You know, it's hard. I have to be honest, like, sometimes it's hard, you know, during Ozark, you know, people would be like, I hate you. You are so unlikable. And you're like, I'm doing my job, but it doesn't
always. People were coming up to you and saying,
yeah, they still do. It's different now. People like me. People like it. They like, you know, I will say, like, a lot of times still when I audition for casting directors, even since Changeling, and then they meet me and my voice is different. My whole demeanor is different.
Yeah,
and
it's called acting.
They don't know. And they're like, you're so different. And you're like, yeah, I'm an actor. I'm that kind of guy. I like to transform, or it feels like a soundboard where you're like, I guess I have to push up this part of myself and I got to let this go. It's funny that. And there are idiosyncratic, amazing actors who are basically themselves, you know?
Yeah.
They're very idiosyncratic, but they're so accessible, so human that it's themselves this way. And, you know, everyone's different and everyone's trajectory is different and everyone's phases is, you know, it's not a constant thing. Also, in terms of abilities, like, you go through waves, like, I'm in this funny phase right now. When I was in my 20s, I was the perfect emotional, tall, skinny, all those melancholy guys. I was that person, very contemplative. And so I just played all those parts. And even when I played Turgenev in Coast of Utopia for that whole time, and I aged from, like, I don't know what it was, 20 to 65, which was so fun. After that finished, I was like, I'm so tired of having to cry. I'm so tired of being kind of erudite and emasculated in a way. I'm just so tired of it. I never get to be dangerous. And then Changeling happened and I got to be dangerous.
And these things have shifted the perception, and I got to imagine the roles. And, you know, now I imagine, you know, pun intended, you have some choice about agency, about what you want to do. What
sometimes
is it?
I mean,
we all got to survive.
I think as you get older. Yeah. And also look at now. I mean, look at, you know,
the great contraction
commercials and projects. Why is this person, this incredible actress, selling gambling sites?
Yeah.
I'm intrigued, you know, but I also, there was a Timothy Olyphant interview when they were like, why did you do this series? And he's like, because I have a family and I have kids and I have a mortgage. Like, Not like shitting on the series, but also, yeah, of course I would want to do this other, what's it called? Lone Star or whatever.
Like, yeah.
Of course I would rather do that. But also, this was what was before me, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, again, whatever, it doesn't matter. So, so you just go through phases, you know? It's hard.
Earlier you had brought up Bob Krakauer, and I'm curious, because your characters are always so deep and different and beautiful. I mean, do you work with a Bob, or do you have an acting coach that you ever utilize? Or
I don't. When I got out of grad school, and people, when I came to LA, when I started coming to LA, there was a different culture here. And it has happened also over time. People have coaches and people they work with and stuff. And so when I got out of grad school, I was like, yeah, I don't need that. I'm good. I want to practice these skills. I want to own it differently. And then you have to, what I also always say is, you have this little personal flame that you have to keep alive. It is the most precious thing you have. And of course, I'm, you know, don't do as I say, not as I do, but, like, you got to keep this thing alive, which is some sense of integrity, some sense of play. And sometimes the industry, the life of it, the majority of people don't understand what actors do. And you just have to know that, like, they don't know what we do.
Yeah.
They think it's about needing attention, which for some people it is. They think it's about ego, you know. And so depending on the director, you certainly can't let them into your house. And you can't let them into your process unless it's a specific director who you're like, okay, we can talk about this. Like, what are we after here? You know, this film that I did, The Edge of Everything, which is also getting a release right now. This great young couple, Pablo Feldman and Sophia, why am I forgetting her last name right now? Poblano, is that what it is? Anyway, they DM'd me on Instagram in the pandemic.
Wow.
And I was like, what is this? And I was like, they were so nice. They lived right nearby. And I said, listen, just will you send this script to my manager and he'll forward it to me and I'll read it and we'll talk. And so I read it and there was tremendous integrity to it. And they both were actors. They were trained actors in high school, blah, blah. And working with them because they were, so I did it. I went and did, I forget, 14 days or something like that in the pandemic, you know, that an independent film dealing with the pandemic.
Wow.
It's crazy. And anyway, that collaboration was really fun because you could say, okay, what? And also because I'm older, I could say, okay, well, what's the most important thing here? Okay, how do you want to? Okay. And so that was really fun. And you never know how it's going to turn out, but it happened to turn out great.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's amazing. But,
and I was able to talk that way with Brett too. I mean, Brett is not an actor, but you can say he's after. Part of the reason why I did the movie and they cast me first. And then
did you know him already, Brett? Or
not at all. Mm. Not at all. That's the benefit of Ozark, you know, that kind of thing. And
it globalizes you in a way that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also Corey and his name is Corey Price in The Big Bend and the dad, I forget his name, in Edge of Everything. Those are more who I am. That's more to what I want to do, the humanity of it, the complexity of it, the humor of it. That's, you know, in some ways I still feel that I haven't been able to do the thing that is the most me, that has also had an impact that has, you know, I watch things. I did the American premiere of this play Cock, that was in England. It was Ben Whishaw and Andrew Scott. In our production, it was me and Corey Michael Smith. It really launched Corey Michael Smith, right?
Yeah. Before Gotham or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
okay.
Gotham was the job that gave him money.
Got it.
You know? Yeah. And then look at his career. Look at May, December. Look at he's a great actor, disciplined and.
Totally.
Takes it very seriously. And I can't help, but it's not. Compare despair. I forget the difference between envy and jealousy. It's just appreciation. And there's a part where you thought, when I graduated, all I wanted was to be in a Merchant Ivory film. I, you know, like when I couldn't afford to buy the book, but when I was in grad school, I would go to the Barnes and Noble. It's not there near Union Square. And Emma Thompson wrote a journal for the whole movie. And I would just go read a chapter and then I would go back and I'd read a chapter. And I was like, this is all I want. I want to be in a company of actors in an inn in the middle of England and like laughing at night and eating together. And, you know, I think part of the joy of the Wes Anderson movies is that sometimes like the whole company's having dinner together or something.
Right.
Like that.
I hear they don't even have a number one on the call sheet, you know?
No.
Yeah. Oh man.
I haven't been able to do that. These films are the closest to me in a while. I'm very proud of a lot of the work that I've done, Ozark especially, and Changeling, and these independent films. I'm proud of them, and I just want to do. I hope to do things on a larger level of visibility and money and impact.
It's coming because nobody. I don't think you realize how many actors look up to you. I mean, you really
that's so nice. People, you know, say that, and I have to be honest. It's hard for me. It's nice, but I think sometimes I'm like, really? Okay.
I mean, you are so outstanding. I'm not just saying that, you know, because obviously I got a lot of love for you, even though we just met. But, you know, you're doing the work that we all want to do, but you're able, whether, you know, it's a petty and you got two seasons or an episode, you're so specific with your work that it elevates it. And, you know, where the business is now and, you know, how
where is the business?
We don't even, you know, but I went from auditioning from guest stars to co-stars only that are sometimes a week. And they make them.
You can have seven scenes of all the emotional stuff and they'll consolidate it into one day.
It's insane.
Day rate.
Dang. But you
for me right now, that's a, you know, it's easy. The complete yeses and the complete nos are easy and you wish for them. Like I was telling the students, I was like, if Clint Eastwood or Steven Spielberg asked you to move it, you're like, that's a yes.
Yeah.
If somebody asks you to do a porn, for the most part, I mean, unless you want to, it's a no.
Unless Gaspar Noé.
it's the gray, and all those things are true. Work begets work. The only power of an actor is no. No is a complete sentence. Bet on yourself. They're all true, and I had to work hard in my career, especially as a Libra. As a person who is a people pleaser, I was sort of the fixer in my family.
I'm a Pisces. I'm the same way.
And like, I want it, you know, daring to say, I no. And also fighting sometimes your own reps, you know. And knowing that I'm saying that now. Talk to me in a year. Look at, again, what everyone's doing now, you know.
I mean, there's some names that just hopped on Jurassic 8 that I'm like, why are you doing that? You can make a studio, you know, and it's a weird time. But that segues me into a question, a few questions that, you know, I often ask guests, particularly guests like yourself that did go to grad school. You know, now I know hindsight is always 20/20, but for the actors listening, do you think, you know, I know it's a cost, and obviously now with inflation, it's a whole other cost, but grad school.
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Like, I had two students. CalArts is like $80,000 a year or something like that.
Isn't that a public school?
No, it's not in the system.
I did not know that.
Okay. And there isn't a lot of financial aid. There's some incentives. For some reason, they had some program where suddenly there were a lot of students, like New York-based, Brooklyn-based, that got some help and support.
Weird.
But, and I had two students who were like, I just can't afford to come here again.
Yeah.
And I think like a lot of college people are saying, is it worth, you know, what is it? Is the juice worth the squeeze?
I still got my undergrad loans, you know, I mean,
that's nuts.
Yeah.
And when I got out of school, everyone was like, don't worry. It's one commercial and one da, da, da. And that is not true. And, you know, the saddle of that much debt. And it's funny.
Was there a weight on your shoulders after graduating?
Oh, God. And then you just have to go into denial. And I'm not good. I'm still trying to do my taxes. Then I'm behind. I'm just not good with that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm good when I had no money to be like, okay, I got it. I'm going to have a piece of pizza. And I would splurge when I did plays where I would buy myself a new shirt and put it on a credit card to try to feel special, you know?
Wow.
But it's a burden. And also, you know, like many corporate things, the system is designed to bone you.
Yeah.
Like when I finally, 8 years out, 9 years out, learned about consolidating. So there was insane interest. I learned about consolidating. I found a great company, Great Lakes, something or other. I got it all organized and got it there. I did the things. When you get a year of payments, you drop down 0.25%. When you did, like, I had the things. It was a system. And then all of a sudden, and they don't contact you, and it's strategic, even though they say it isn't, another borrower, consolidator
buys the loan. Oh, I just had that happen to me.
And then you're searching for it, and they're trying to fuck you to get you back to these percentages and penalize you.
The late fees, it's insane.
It's insane. And so then you just sort of accrue it. And, you know, my mom and my stepfather, my first stepfather, they had a business. They would work for not-for-profits. At some point, they met at United Way. They left that partially because there was all this corruption going on and they had to
– Wow.
It reached a point where they had to be be with it or not. So they separated and they formed their own business. Again, unheard of from my family. It was event planners. It was like for not-for-profits and before computers. So I would be like in high school, you know, like the National Perinatal Association's having their annual conference in New Orleans and people would send in the things and you'd alphabetize and all this shit. Anyway, what was my point?
We're talking about grad school and I think it, make sense.
It was you take the risk. You have to take the risk. And my parents had this big food event in DC and then Norfolk and Baltimore that ultimately went bankrupt. Wow. And I learned through that there's some ways with the American government and taxing, you have to let it go into such a level of debt that somehow after years, it comes back around a different way. It seems crazy. Yeah. So the debt for me, I think when I graduated, I had like $67,000 or $76,000 of debt. But by the time I paid well over $100,000 back. And I maybe made a mistake because with the first season of Ozark, I did have an advisor who said like, you know, if you just keep paying the minimum payment, this debt is good and paying it back is good credit and stuff like that. And you can take the money and you can invest it. And I don't know. I made the decision I made. I was like, I hate these fucking Fannie, Sally and Nellie Mae sisters.
Yeah, I'm tired of this mail.
I want to pay it off. I want it off my shoulders because chasing it down, it was a drag.
And, it's so much stamina. It is insane.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's not right. I have been able to help some friends, a cousin who's an elementary school teacher, a friend of mine I went to undergrad who became like a sort of speech therapist, another friend who became an ICU nurse. I've helped find ways where I was like, just go fill this out. And they got like $24,000 forgiven or this. And I just am hell bent on trying to help, especially my family members, especially like,
thank you for your service. That's so kind of you.
It's like, you have to get a master's degree to be a kindergarten teacher. And you're going to go into this amount of debt to do a job that's $37,000 a year. Fuck off.
Yeah. It's insane. And I'm curious, this segues me into my last question that I ask every guest. And I know it's,
just want to say one thing. Sorry. I don't know. The problem is, or the challenge is, I believe in training. We believe in training. I think
of course.
Important. And there are people who just come out and they're good. And I'm great friends with people who never went to training. You know, Sarah Paulson.
Yeah.
She went to high school. Martha Plimpton never had training. And they learned in a different way. And there's definitely something for learning on the job. You know, it's really important. It was helpful for me. I had no frame of reference. I didn't know how to breathe. I didn't know how to – all these things. And I see it when I go to the theater and the voices are tight or they're tight. Like I see it and I work on it. It's important to me. I think acting is about energy. The more I get, it's about accessible energy and what we have to do to get there to let it be present for us to see. Not demonstrative, just open energy. We have to try to live our life with a certain degree of open energy. And yet – and so now we don't know what the business is going to be. We don't know how we're going to watch content, how much, who's going to make it. It's a crazy time. And you are obviously, if you're an Instagram person or you have somehow created a following for yourself, you can get at bats because you walk in the door with following. And so
I CAA signing that now. It's
where the money is. And I'm just saying it is called show business, not show friends. But like I don't acting goes through changes over time. And you have to make sure you're watching it and hold things dear that you think are true. But also when acting has gotten like super naturalistic, to the point where after reality television, I have a theory, because that's all semi-scripted, sort of created anyway, then people think that's real, but it's not real. And so you have to try to figure out, obviously genre, director, case by case, but you have to make sure you have your finger on the pulse of like, oh, this is what's happening. I can't stay. I never wanted to be a Shakespearean actor who was dictatorial. I never wanted to be that.
Yeah.
But then over time, I believe Shakespeare, you can just talk it like, you know, I don't know, my first sonnet I ever, or I live your epitaph to make, or you survive when I in earth am rotten. Like, I just believe it can work that way, but you have to keep your finger and your mind on that and consciousness of it so that you continue to work.
Wow. You want to be that is a golden – I mean, I didn't even have to ask my last question, and you answered it. It was advice, but that was just so sage. Thank you for sharing that. That was so on the nose. And Jason Buller-Hunter, I mean, you are amazing. I mean, please come back when the next thing's out. I would love to have you. I feel bad that I've taken up so much of your time because I could talk to you so easily. And
but I just want to say, sorry, because the things I do want to say, there are things in the Big Bend that are so good. It's so good. There's great acting in it. It's me. I just want to say Virginia Call,
where can people find it?
So there's a rollout right now. So for instance, it's got on this coming up April 26th and 27th, Friday, Saturday at the Look Cinema on 57th and the West Side Highway, which I haven't
been. Oh, the new dine-in one. I think I've heard about that. Yeah.
It's there. It's going to be in May. It'll be at the Lemley Santa Monica in Santa Monica. And it's going to do some dates in Texas because it's such a Texan movie.
Yeah.
So they're finding their way. And then it's going to – I think it's not complete yet, but there's a plan for where it'll be even easier to see longer. And then also The Edge of Everything. It's funny. This movie, it's happening. Both of the movies were at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival in 2 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
The Edge of Everything happened to win the Panavision Film Award this year. And – so that one's getting it's the same night it's at the same night Big Bend is at the Lemley Santa Monica. This one's at the Lemley NoHo.
And there's
dates in Brooklyn coming up in May I forget the festival. I think it's like Women in Film.
Wow.
But I just want to say one more thing. I'm so sorry.
I'm in no rush. Take please.
Just have to make your own work. You have to make it. Because you own it. You can get paid for it. It's a different sense of entitlement and also, I mean, ownership, literally, and protection of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the discipline of this life, which goes with the artistry and all the things, you got to have the thick skin to do the thin skin. Like, it just is. I know that is the key. And a lot of us aren't necessarily built to make our own work. I love doing other writers' work. I love creating stuff.
And I think there's a bunch of actors out there now that are, pun intended, despairing because it's like, well, I'm not a writer. I'm not a producer. I'm not a self-tape editor, gaffer, lighter, you know.
But, or you have to find the people. That's the other thing I say, especially younger actors. Like, you got to make it because a lot of people talk a fair game. They never make shit. Yeah. And they're Monday quarterbacking the whole time. And it's like I believe in failure so much because of the theater. You know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. If you don't try and fail, no matter what, you've made a thing.
Yeah.
You've learned something. And even if you fail, you're 21 years old. It probably should suck in some way.
Well, that's how you get better, right?
That's how you get better.
Yeah.
And also, the industry is always going to have their eye on you because it's changing and they need to create content. They need to create things for whatever barometer that are good, that have integrity, that are new, that speak to the zeitgeist of the moment that can be made money from. Also, just that is interesting and speaks to the moment, you know?
So, and you were on High Maintenance, which was like one of those things, right?
I love them. And listen, that was the thing where I got off the plane. I flew back to LA from a thing. And I got off the plane. They're like, there's this role this week for this character. And I was like, it has to be local hire. I was like, I'm on the plane. I'll come back tomorrow. Because all I wanted was that. And they're amazing. And something had happened with an episode that they had to drop it out. And then they came up with that one, I think, is what happened.
Got it.
But yeah, I just want the movie. My husband and I made this movie. It's his thing. He's a writer. He was a journalist. He still is a journalist. He wrote Pitch Perfect, the book. And then he's become a screenwriter, an incredible screenwriter. And after having literally 7 projects on the vine, an animated thing, after a short story, a kid story he made, this thing based on an article, this based on another book of his, after they all sort of dried, they're not dead, but it's a weird thing in LA, especially for writers.
Development hell, so to speak.
Is it? He was like, and in the pandemic, he's like, I have to make something. So he wrote this great short film called The Anne Frank Gift Shop.
I tried finding it online today.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to see that.
It's 15 minutes tight. He's a great editor. It's
Oscar shortlisted as well.
That wasn't the plan. And it got Oscar shortlisted, you know? We called our friends. We ventured into the unknown. I was afraid because it was his first time directing, and sometimes we hadn't collaborated like that. He was amazing. And I was able to call Ari Grainer and Chris Perfetti and Kate Burton, and we got Josh Myers. And then Henry Russell helped us get this actress, comedian I'd never heard of, who's amazing and killing it, Mary Beth Barone. And we had 2 days, and it was so fun, and it turned out great, and it certainly cost more money than we thought it was going to cost. And you know, you just have to make it. And there's ingenious ways that you can do it, and there's ways also similar to the American theater right now. A great part of your job that nobody wants to do is raise money.
Yeah, totally.
That's probably in some ways the hardest part.
Yeah,
of the job. And you know, on Sugar, half of the season is directed by Fernando Marais and his camera op Cesar. They did City of God. I don't know if you ever saw that movie.
Yeah, of course. I love City of God. Yeah.
So they're scrappy, man. They're grab it. And the way they shoot, it's fast and it's so fun. And you're working fast and finding new ways. And
because was that a fun experience working with Colin? Yeah.
No, truly.
Yeah.
I've been blessed with some really amazing number ones. Jason and Laura, for sure. Kerry Washington, when I did an arc on Scandal. Actors who want to help you. Actors who you learn from. And I've had some horrible ones, too. Ones that, like, they leave when it's your coverage after you've been helping them. You know, you're just
you got to be fucking kidding. Oh, my God.
And also, you know, the ones that always crack me up is, look, you know when you do an episode of television, if you're the one talking to the star and you have the exposition, you know a large number of times it's going to be your shoulder and their face. And you just have to make your peace with it because they're the money. It's the audience is following their story. Anyway, Colin, I hadn't felt like I was really acting. I hadn't felt like I was acting in a way that I know is the sweet spot for me. There's just such ease and calm and grace in his eyes and true collaboration.
Yeah.
And he knows, an actor like that in some ways knows a camera better than anyone.
I'm sure.
And the generosity within who his person is, his Irishness for sure, the humor. There's nobody you want to be out at 3 a.m. with more laughing your ass off, the respect for each other and the idea that if you both genuinely open yourselves up to each other, something happens. The amount of comments and things that I've heard from people that are real comments, not smoke, about the first two scenes that just aired last week that I have with him. I'm his best friend in the thing. And a lot more is coming and a lot of fun reveals.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Amy Ryan's amazing as well.
She's a very close friend of mine. Like she's
Man. Like I love Amy Ryan.
Crimes of the Heart.
Wow.
And I helped her through, I mean, she did all the work, but that doubt, you know, where she took over for Tyne Daly and was on Broadway playing one of the largest roles in 6 days. That was a whole series of like, okay, like you circle your tightest circle and you're like, okay, how are we going to support you? Do your thing. You're going to be awesome. You have to walk through this fire and you have to keep walking through fire. There's things that you're like, this is dumb. I'm not safe here. And then there's things I always love to go for the thing that frightens me the most. I always love it. I'm afraid I'm going to be caught, found out. There's some things where I'm like, I got this, I can do it. And then there's some things where you're like, oh, fuck, I haven't had to flex these muscles in a long time.
Yeah.
I got to do it. Anyway, she's the best. The economy of her acting is a constant lesson. She, even in that recent production of Doubt, there was no muscle there. It's very moving to me. I'm inspired by it because in the early days of acting, I think I was a little bit, there was a little like, are you getting it? You know, there's a little indication and it's made me a much better actor. Anyway, Colin, it was just heaven. And I'd be surprised if they don't announce a second season because it's doing well.
Oh, for sure.
I hope, given what's coming, that I get to be a part of the second season just because I just want to act with him.
Yeah.
And also, it shoots in L.A., so...
You get to stay
in Los Feliz. He lives like a mile away, and he wants to work from home after the Penguin. Yeah. I was like, that would be nice.
Let's get season two. Apple, I think they got the money for that. Oh, man. Jason Butler Horner, thank you for sharing, giving You're back. So well, this has been one of my favorite episodes ever, I have so much love for you, and I really do.
Thanks.
I'm just so much gratitude for the work that you do, everything that you shared, and I sincerely –
you made this podcast. Like
I tried, man.
Podcast and look at the actors who you've had and the actors that you've had that will have a moment. Like Coleman is on your list.
Yeah,
that
Coleman.
Coleman did Passing Strange, and the city was like, "Who is this?" Like, but you talk to him is what I mean. He's done more movies and stuff, but like, you're making something.
I'm trying.
You're genuinely interested. Like,
I care about actors because I'm an actor, and I love hearing how people do it. I love people. You know, I think that we're humanists, us actors, and
it's true. We try to be. It's just about learning boundaries.
It's not easy in today's environment, but
no,
you know.
It's about learning boundaries. And also, I was talking last night about the times where. That's why I said you can't allow people into your process. I genuinely more and more don't like actors talking about process. And there's some things I just won't talk about because they're too precious and I don't want to.
It's like naming it
and it dies. Like when a friend comes to your show and they're like, that moment when you said this and you turned your head and you're like, it is now dead.
Yeah.
It's now dead for a week.
You ruined it for me.
Please don't do that.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you're on set and like I used to talk about theater. And I was like, you can't talk about theater because they start, unless you're with theater actors. Like when I did this thing with Harriet Harris and Corbin Burnson and Jackie Weaver. We talked about theater all the time. But it's also why I say just follow a sport, especially if you're a gay guy who doesn't follow sports. Go follow a sport.
I don't follow sports and I'm straight. It doesn't matter.
Just so you have something to talk about on set. Yeah. Just so you have something to talk about that's not art or theater unless those people are into it anyway.
Totally.
Because when you share your thing with someone, sometimes people in trying to help you and they're looking for that and then they start to see it when it's not there. So endow them or don't give them the things to shoot you with unless they're a specific kind of director where you can say, I'm concerned that this looks victim-y or whatever like that. But for the most part, I had to learn the hard way. Because then what happens is directors are like, you know, it's Shakespearean. And you're like, it is absolutely not Shakespearean. And then, it is Chekhovian. It's about, they think it's about, and you're like, it is not
Chill
about
out.
That. Thanks. Anyway, talk too much.
Well, I want to summarize. So the Big Bend, we got that coming out. Then
it's so good. Go support it. Please, really. It's really good.
The other pandemic one that's coming up as well. You said that was at Santa Barbara. What's the name of that one more time?
That one's going to be in NoHo, and it's something coming. It's called Edge of Everything. They made that movie also for $1.50. That one is the first feature that those amazing young people from theater, they're not, whatever, I keep saying like they're young. They are young. They're like 27. Their integrity is so good. Brett's integrity is good. But like their integrity is so good. And I didn't watch it until I saw it at Santa Barbara, and I kept... You hope it's going to be good, but I kept being like, this is fucking great.
Yeah.
And, that's a coming of age story for a 15-year-old girl.
And this is the DM project, right? The one
that
just got-
That was the DM project. My team thought I was crazy.
Wow. Goes to show you, they don't always know everything, and more often than not, they don't.
I won't name this actress because maybe she, but I will say this incredible actress was nominated for two Oscar films that were low budget. And in both cases, her team was like, this is a mistake. Do not do this. And she was like, can you look at the writing here? And can you look at the roster of New York actors here? Like, and that wasn't the goal. She's not an awardsy person at all, but the quality of the work was good in a way. And it was that happened. So sometimes you got to fight. You got to fight hard for it. And sometimes I will always do the movie that's better for $1.50 unless if some big major payday came in, you're like, I gotta.
Yeah,
unless
of course.
Something really gross. Anyway.
Yeah. Jason Bolton, I just want to say you mentioned Coleman and, like, you know, having him, like, you're one of them. It's coming within 12 months. That big thing, I believe it. That thing that's going to show the levity and not this way that you get typed because for whatever reason you've done that role before and people are dumb enough to not think outside the box. I see it coming for you.
I have to believe it.
I know it's coming for you. And I'm manifesting that we get a chance to work together on a project.
I would love
it. Yeah. And
I would love it. And I'm manifesting a series regular for you.
So thank you. Man. Those loans. Anything but these Irish cops that I keep getting. But
unless it's based on the Irish.
Yeah. Then. You know what? You know, or we do it in Ireland and I'll get an Irish accent. But Jason Butler Hunter, you're an amazing artist through and through. You're an amazing human. Thank you for everything that you do at Cal Arts, giving back today. I have so much love and respect for you. You're awesome. A true artist and to be continued.
Wow. Thank you so much.
To be continued. What's that?
If you like the show, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening.